something like 1942-ish, 1942-43.
Yeah.
So you said you enlisted then?
I wasn't enlisted, I volunteered.
You volunteered,
I volunteered, and Gibraltarians were not conscripted as a conscript into the army or the navy or the air force or the mines. Some of them, some British people, young people, had to go down the mines, you know. And I was a volunteer, went down to Exeter to do all my pre-medicals and things like this in 1943. And in 1944, I was called up and I went into the Fleet Air Arm. And I went to Bristol for a flying test. I had to go and do all sorts of things that you do. And I was colorblind, so I couldn't go in as a pilot. So I went in as an air gunner.
So did you know that before, that you were colorblind?
No, not at all. I've discovered it there and then.
And what does that mean exactly when you're
colourblind?
What does it actually mean when you're colourblind?
That you can't distinguish the shades of colours. You can distinguish red and green, and it's the blues and the pale blues and the yellows and things like this are distinct, and it's dangerous.
And were you disappointed then?
Yes, very disappointed actually.
And can you remember what...
I thought it was an excuse that they had too many volunteers for pilots and they wanted them for something else. So they use that excuse that you're colourblind. I said, but you can go into an air crew. What's the difference?
That's true.
Yeah. But anyway,
I mean, being gunner is much more it's much more dangerous.
Well, much more dangerous when they're shooting at you, you know.
So tell us a little bit about that, what that was like. And how, actually, before you do that, how old were you?
I was 16 and a half.
So young.
Yeah, I had to have a chitty signed by my father and my mother that they allowed me to volunteer at that age. Madness.
So what happened then?
And then I went to train in Warrington. They give you marching drills and things like this, that they call basic training, how to fire a gun and how to wear a uniform and how to salute officers and all the rest of it, you know. And I went to Warrington and I volunteered for a special commando in Warrington because I wasn't satisfied that I was going to actually fly, which I did eventually. But I joined a special commando, a naval commando, called MONABS, Mobile Operational Naval Air Bases. And you went in and you killed Japanese and people and laid out strips for landing and things like this. It was brutal. They dehumanized you in the course, you know. And it was such a tough assault course that they put it into your service record. It was really tough. It wasn't easy, you know. It was a type of commando, naval commando, that sort of thing, you know. And I joined that mob, and we had a whale of a time, you know, because we were hanging around and we didn't do a lot of fighting in the jungle as we expected to. So we were loafing around on the beaches and the lagoons in Ceylon until something cropped up. We did an operation off an island called Ramri and Chaduma off the coast of Burma. Not an extraordinary thing, you know. And we enjoyed ourselves. It was lovely.
So was your mother worried that you might be sort of a pilot that would be in the Battle of Britain or something like
no,
that?
No, in those days, though, they, those people were heroes. So everybody thought that if you went up in a flying, you were a hero, you know, rather than anything else. Rather than joining a dangerous thing, and they never told you how many people were killed in the Battle of Britain. They told you the ones who survived. And all the special ones who saw at night and they ate a lot of carrots and things like this because it was good for the eyesight. Rubbish, all the propaganda, and we all swallowed it, you know.
But I'm sure that as a young man, that's what you... I mean, I was talking to somebody who was on HMS Eagle when it sunk, who was the aircraft carrier during the war, and he said that, you know, he was so young, and he said, you know, when you're young, you don't think you're going to die.
You don't, never. Never, it was all an adventure. All an adventure. If you were in the scouts and you were in an adventure. And what happened during the war, that people who were older than I was, people of 40, some of them were given white feathers. White feathers as cowards, you know, or conscientious objectors. And this was a film that was given and they gave people who didn't want to go into the service in white feathers, and it was unfair because they were probably the very reserved occupation, and they were probably in the spying business actually, and flying into France and all these places, you know. So it was difficult for people of a certain age not to be in uniform.
And so you were a volunteer for how long? How many years?
Well, I was demobbed when I was 20. I wasn't even 21. Demobbed in 1946, at December 46. And they said, "We're not going to demob you. You're too young." I said, "Well, they used to give you a number and a letter and a number, because after the war, the people who were released from the services first were people who could repair the war damage."
Yes, I understand. Right.
Carpenters, electricians, masons, people like that. People in the building trade, because everything was bombed down. So they released all the tradesmen first, and then the people who were superfluous, to not tradesmen like myself, who were just a flyer. They were the last to be released. So, but I was, my number came up, and I was demobilized in Gibraltar. I was sent over from Trincomalee in Ceylon. I was based in Trincomalee in Ceylon, in a place called China Bay. And I was based in a huge naval base. And they said, you're going back to Gib, because the Indomitable, it was a ship I'd served on during the war, the Indomitable was going back, was touching into Gib, and they dropped me off at Gib. Can you imagine? Dropping one guy off, the amount of fuel that must have been consumed just to branch off, instead of going straight through the Straits and up to England, it just came in, dropped me off, and it's just going to drop you off in Gib, which was lovely. And I was demobilised in Gib, in HMS Rook, actually. And they didn't want to demobilise me, they said I was too young.
That's an amazing story.
Not that I'm young, it's that my number and my letter is on the list, and I'm absolutely up for demobilisation. You have to demobilise. That was the 18th of December 1946.
So had your mother returned by this time?
Yes. And they went to Spain to live. The house that they had here had been taken over by the military, and they couldn't get in.
And did they get it back?
They didn't, actually. We were taken over by somebody else. We were in Spain, and we took over another house, you know. But we lived in Spain until I got married in 1954.
So, did you, when you got this fantastic story about being dropped off in Gibraltar, it's mad, isn't it? It's crazy.
It's comical, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a fantastic
story. It's the sort of
thing
you see in film, but it's true. It's absolutely gospel truth. And my father came out on one of the tenders to see if he could see me. He got on one side, I got off the other side.
That's fantastic. So what was it like? It must have been so amazing coming home.
Oh, it was lovely to get back home and see your family and things like this. It was reintroducing yourself to the family at a different age. Because I'd left in 19... When did I leave? I was in India for 2.5 years, so I didn't see my family for about 3 years. My mother and my brothers and my sisters or anything for 3 years.
So they were all, did they all go to Spain?
And then we were all together. We got very drunk that Christmas, actually.
That was the Christmas of
1946? 1946, yeah. Very drunk. We had a good celebration, yeah.
And where were you in Spain?
In San Roque.
So not so far
away. The other side? No, about 5 miles away. You know, we had a house there. My mother had property in San Roque, which she inherited from her father. And I'm living now in a house in Spain which she inherited from her father on a piece of land outside San Roque. That's where I live. I built a house there.
How
in
fantastic.
Honor of my mother, so I feel closer to my mother. Because mothers are different from fathers. Mm. Fathers are the ones who come in and use the heavy hand when the mothers can't cope with it. But the mothers are the protective, the mother hen who looks after the kids when they're sick and ill and all the rest of it.
I think also mothers and sons.
Yeah.
It's quite a big thing, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. She loved my brother, my elder brother. My father used to say she was a widow with one son. But he didn't say that my sister was an apple in his eyes, you know. But it was lovely. It was a great family. We had a lovely family. Not a lot of money, but a good family, a happy family. Happy. It was really, I had a lovely, happy life with my family.
That's a lovely thing to say.
Yeah, fantastic. Fantastic. When my father and mother were like lovebirds. They were all together and they were completely and utterly in love with each other. It was fabulous.
That is lovely.
Not a lot of wealth. Well, it's sufficient, you know. But it was a happy family. It was a lovely existence. Always laughing, always joking. Good family.
Did your mother, were your parents fed up with the, well, fed up maybe a bit tame, about the house, losing the house in Gibraltar?
They were upset, yes.
I mean, did they own the house?
No, it was rented. It was rented.
And what about all your things? Did you manage to get all your stuff back?
Furniture, it was all stored, you know. It was awful.
So did you never get your furniture back?
It was allocated to somebody else, you know, at least allocated to us. But they didn't allocate it to my father because he said he wasn't Gibraltarian. He was English, but the children were Gibraltarian and my mother was a Gibraltarian.
So did you lose a lot of family stuff then?
But we were a family, we kept together and we were happy where we were, you know. We enjoyed it, I enjoyed some of it, it was lovely.
What's the house we're talking about in Gibraltar, the one in Library Ramp?
Yeah, that's the one, yeah, that's the one I'm talking about, yeah. It was wicked.
Have you been back?
No, I don't want to go. I don't want anywhere. They took it away from us and they gave it to somebody else.
So did they give it to sort of British military who were serving?
The British military were there and when they left, they handed it over to somebody else.
And who was that person?
Oh, I don't want to mention it. It was terrible.
Okay.
Terrible. Bad deal. It was one of the unfair deals and he never served in the services. He never did anything. He made a lot of money in a chemist. Terrible.
Do you think this happened quite a lot to people?
I don't know. But the non-Gibraltarians were treated badly after the war as such. You know, the ones who were living here permanently. My father became a Gibraltarian later on, you know.
But it's interesting, isn't it? Because if they were British, they were being treated British,
just as much as it was the unfairness of the system at the time.
I know.
And I put it down to that, the unfairness of the system at the time, the dictatorial unfairness of the system.
I was about to say the rigidity of it.
Yeah, it was wicked.
I mean, I did have a few people I've interviewed who were the people who went, as you said earlier, went to Ireland and couldn't get back for a long time because they couldn't find anyone to vouch for them.
That's right.
I mean, that's some terrible
people,
stories.
For example, who were married in Madeira to Portuguese, and then some of them stayed there, and some of them, sorry.
It's okay, no, don't worry.
Some of them came back, and they couldn't get housed because they weren't Gibraltarians. It was unfair, now they've changed the law. Now you inherit the Gibraltarian mother. You're a total Gibraltarian by right, as a son or an issue of a Gibraltarian mother.
Right. I don't want to push this too much, but I just want to get something clear in my mind. This house you're talking about, you rented it.
Yes.
But it was still you felt it was yours, or you lost it.
Yes, of course you did.
Yes.
I always thought it was ours. I didn't think about who whether it was rented or not. I thought it was my father's, you know.
And your family.
And my family, yeah.
And did you lose your family possessions through that?
Or no, not at all. No, they were stored. The furniture and things like this was all stored in the silver and things like that.
But it was a sort of what? A question of trust?
Yes, yeah. It was wicked. Because you come back to your house after 3 of us were serving in the services during the war. And that didn't have an effect on it at all. Wicked.